Brigadier Daniel, Reel 6. We were talking about the Wavell Offensive and the Battle of Sidi Barani around the camps of Maktila, your role in Selby Force, commanding Daniel Battery, as it was known. Just to clear up on tape, you said you were on Wavell's staff, but were you detached from 3rd RHA to Wavell's staff, or was it just more informal than that?
I must have been detached in order to take command of what guns there were in Mersmer True and what men there were manning them, and to advance to the Battle of Barani, which was about to take place, with every gun that I was able to find.
Were you able to train with them first?
No.
Now, they set off round about the 7th of December. I mean, we can check the dates in the books later. What do you remember day by day of the... I think it took a couple of days, the 3 or 4 days, the whole battle. What do you remember?
Are you
of
it? Interested in it?
Yes, we are. Aside from the South, not as ours, we're interested in this battle.
I had two jobs to do. I had to take the guns up after dark. I therefore had to send someone forward to mark out the gun positions, which were to be very accurately planned. I sent the adjutant forward.
Do you remember his name?
No. And when I arrived, within 2 miles of the Maktila camp, I found the adjutant. And I asked him where the battery positions were which he had marked out. He said he had not marked any out, as he had been too nervous to approach the camp alone. I told him that if I saw him again, I would shoot him, and he'd better make his way as fast as he could back to Cairo any way he liked. I then had to determine where each battery was to go and lay a telephone wire back so that someone could lead them up to their positions after dark. That was satisfactorily accomplished, and every gun position was occupied during a pitch dark night and were ready for the start of the battle in the morning. The other job I was asked to do was to sit on the main road. And when the...
That would be the road from Mersmer True to Sidi Barani, would it?
Yeah, there's only one road.
The coastal road.
The coastal road. And when the battleship opened fire on the Maktila camp, I had to put the fire... different kind of dairy lights to show the battleship that was standing out to sea several miles whether the rounds were falling plus or minus. The first round that fell, I was sitting on the side of the road, and this I saw of it was it was dark, and I saw the it was a 12-inch shell, a solid head, and it was white hot, and it passed within a very short distance of me and went on 2 or 3 miles before it exploded, and I went 2 or 3 miles down the road in the opposite direction and carried on from there, and got several of the shells into Maktila camp, which entirely disorganized the whole camp.
Now, did the actual system of firing very lights work then? You were able to coordinate the fire using it?
Well, we'd had an officer from the battleship who stayed with me in the desert for 3 weeks to learn how to do this.
And which battleship was it?
Well, I can't remember what it was.
Was it the Warspite?
I think it was a Warspite. Well, there wasn't a battleship called Queen Mary, was there?
No, not then.
It was a Warspite.
And that would be 15-inch shells then?
Yes. They were very unpleasant to look at.
And you say that it had a devastating effect on the camp?
It completely. All the Senussis immediately ran away after the first shell had fallen. And I don't blame them because it made a very large noise.
Now, were your guns firing as well?
Yes, we opened fire as soon as the first shell arrived from the battleship.
And did they similarly cause?
They caused a tremendous amount of chaos, and they set fire, fortunately, to several lorries, which made the shooting very much easier than if there had been no sign of anything to shoot at. The Italians did not answer. They were bent on loading up the lorries and getting out of the place. Dawn broke. They were wandering about all over the place. And I gave a company of guards, who I think were Coldstream, breakfast, and in one of the batteries, because they had brought no breakfast with them. And then I set off to see what I could find.
So the Italians had fallen back from Mactila.
They had surrendered. The whole lot surrendered. The Senussi had run away. They were the inhabitants of what is now Libya. And they were good fighters, but they were not, they couldn't cope with 12-inch shells. It was something quite out of their ken altogether. So they removed themselves as far and as fast as they could. Didn't make much difference to the Italians. So they all surrendered a whole lot. I've got a photograph of it in one of those books.
I've seen.
It was Gallinari.
What happened when you went forward then? Because in the books, it seems to imply that they fired on the camp and then the Italians pulled out and then you followed them up for a couple of days and then they finally surrendered a couple of days later.
They all surrendered where they were at the camp.
The first camp. That's how you remember
it. Camp.
And what happened when you went forward then? You went forward and...
I went forward and got hold of a transport officer, an Italian transport officer, to pick up all the transport wounded in his camp and proceed south along the road towards Cairo with the wounded. And I got several senior Italian officers to form up all the troops into one large phalanx where they were fed, watered, and remained under guard. They marched off down the road towards Cairo next day, and I never saw them again.
Now, what about the generals you met? In your thing, you mentioned Generalissimo Gallini.
Yes.
What do you remember of him? He gave you a card, I think,
yes,
which is in your album.
He came to see me in his... He had an Italian, very nice Italian car, and he came to surrender. He gave me his card, and I showed him the way to go to Cairo, and I said, you will find British troops on the way who will assist you to surrender yourself to the headquarters in Cairo.
What was his demeanour? I mean, was he...
Delightful.
Was he ashamed of the surrender? I mean, they hadn't...
Not in the least. I think he was delighted.
You got the opinion he had no stomach for the fight, then?
I'm not going to say anything about that because I don't remember it. I merely remember that he was a very delightful man.
And what about what happened next then? I mean, did you move forward?
Then toured the battlefield and the camp to see what I could find.
And what did you find?
I found a dugout with seven officers in it. I put a couple of revolver shots into the dugout, and they all came out. And two of them were the paymasters who just arrived with sacks of lira notes, 7 months, thousands and thousands of lira notes. Well, as it was the first battle and the rules against looting were very stringent, most of the notes flew away in the wind. But it was interesting to see them. That's quite enough for me to say. I did actually collect.
You collected some?
No, I collected some mementos.
Oh, I see. Some. What sort of thing were you looking for? You mentioned cameras and
revolvers. Revolvers. I got them and picked up a little. Every matches of dogs, beautiful dogs. And I picked up a little corgi dog. And as I picked it up, it bit me in the wrist. Well, I had got an extremely bad desert sore. Now, that dog developed rabies in 5 days' time and bit 19 men of a British infantry regiment who were destined to go to Cairns, where I hope they were all killed before they developed rabies, because he was 100% rabid when I picked him up. I went off on a job that I had been allotted for 3 weeks. I returned, and never having had any injections, was horrified to hear that my dog had rabies.
So you didn't know that this incident had happened? What was the job, just out of it?
I can't remember.
So what did you do?
Oh, I think I went to Abyssinia to see one of our batteries that was had been sent to Abyssinia to fight the Italians, a P battery.
That's third RHA.
Oh yes, the Colonel's third RHA sent me up there to see if how the battery was getting on and if everything was all right.
No, I just want to clear this up, because I've just got the history of the South Notts Hussars here, and they think that you were second in command of the 8th Field Regiment when you took over Daniel's battery at Mercer Matruh. Now, as far as you're concerned, that's wrong, isn't it?
No recollection of it at all. I did go to Mercer Matruh, perfectly true. I stayed at Mercer Matruh, commanding whatever guns there were there, until Lord Wavell's plans were completed.
So you may have been that, but you weren't aware of it. That I think we'll leave it at that. Yes. There's no need to pursue that any further. Now, you came back and found that your dog, or this dog, had been rabid. So what did you do?
I went to the adjutant and asked for an aeroplane to fly me to Cairo, which he arranged for. I went to the hospital and I arrived on a Sunday morning. There'd been a dance on the Saturday night and everybody seemed to have got drunk. And I asked the sergeant, did he know anything about rabies? And he said, oh yes, he had several Italian officers were in the process of developing it. And I said, what happened to them? He says, oh, they all die. If you get rabies, you die. I said, thank you very much. So I went down back into Cairo itself and went to see my wife and have breakfast. And then I went to the Swiss Pasteur
the clinic.
The three very nice elderly men went through the utmost trouble into exactly the day and the time at which I was bitten by my dog. And they came to the conclusion that I was bitten at 10 o'clock and the dog was 100% rabid at 2 o'clock. I was therefore, it was far too late to ask for serum, they regretted very much that I was bound to develop rabies, and they only hoped that I would develop it very soon and would die very quickly. Well, I was averse to dying of rabies, so I said, as a favor to me, will you give me a double dose of serum for 14 days? And they agreed. They said, it's totally useless, but we will do it for you, if we think you're a brave man. And so I had a dose every morning, and then I went home, had a half bottle of champagne, and went to sleep.
How did you have, it's supposed to be a very painful injection, the rabies, anti-rabies. I mean, did you have it in your stomach? Or
yes, and I got so many holes in my stomach that as the last lots of the rabies, anti-rabies serum was pumped in, on one side it came out of the holes on the other side. They said goodbye to me, and they hoped very much that I would develop rabies very quickly and that I would have a quick and happy death. I thank them very much for their kind thoughts, but I was not really okay with what they hoped would happen, because I hoped that I would not get rabies.
Now, you didn't. Now, why did you... Was this... in your thing, you speculate this is because it was you'd been bitten on a desert sore. Did you think that was it, or...?
Of course it was. I was bitten there.
That's on the left wrist?
On the left wrist, where it was a deep desert sore. Both my arms were in stockings, and I had so many of these desert sores that you get from touching the tank when it's in white hot. Very hot in the weather. And the bugs in the desert sore ate up the bugs in the rabies and destroyed them, and I never got any infection whatsoever. I was 3 weeks, and you've got to be inoculated within 4 days. And it was 3 weeks since I'd been bitten. So it wasn't surprising that the experts, who were very nice Swiss professors, were absolutely certain that I would very shortly develop the disease.
Now, the next thing, you were posted to the Suez Canal, where you were on rather... the South Knots were on it as well, but you, again, unaware that they were there.
I've given a certain number of men, sent to the Suez Canal, and told to do all I could to earmark exactly where the Germans dropped their bombs.
Mines.
Their mines. Now, I knew that a part of the Suez Canal for about a mile and a quarter had been blasted away through rocks. And the Germans knew this too perfectly well too, because they had got all the maps from various spies, and they knew exactly where this rock was, this portion of the canal. I sat in a boat with a hunting horn, and every night when there was no moon, I sat in the boat and waited for the German aeroplane to arrive with the mine, which it did. I had 50 men, one on one side of the canal, one on the other, and their job was to put in a stake where they saw the mine splash into the water. My job was to blow the horn and warn them that the aeroplane, which was only about 150 feet up, was flying over my head. The troops enjoyed this pastime very much. They had plenty of female to enjoy themselves with for the rest of the day, and were only on duty for the short time that the aeroplane was dropping its mine. But they did not enjoy it the one night when the mine missed the canal and hit the towbar and blew everything for miles round up into the air. After that, they did what they were told to do, which was to lie deeply down as they could in slit trenches as the aeroplane passed by.
So you were doing that, and then you were...
Now, I was also preparing to take a force to Crete.
I thought in your memoirs it says Rhodes. Now
Rhodes. All right, Rhodes.
Whichever.
It was Rhodes. Oh, quite right. Rhodes. And I was superintending the training of the landing of guns and men by dark on the shores, which we did in the parts of the canal by night. One afternoon, a very hot, very tired, very harassed young man arrived in a jeep and said, "I have been looking for you, Colonel Daniel, for a long time. I've seen nobody who's ever heard of you, and I've been unable to find you." And I said, "Oh, yes, well, what do you want to see me about?" He said, "You have got to take a regiment that has just come out from England, or is camped." I didn't know, but I thought he'd come from England. "Or is encamped in the Ismailia transit camp today to Tobruk." So I said, I was quite prepared to do that. It would take me half an hour to collect my kit, and I would be ready to go and see this regiment and proceed. I went to Ismailia camp. I found the regimental sergeant major, who told me there were hardly any officers there. They were all bathing or gone to Cairo. And I said, "Well, you will assemble the regiment, and you will not wait for any officer or any man who is not present, and you will leave under my instructions at 6 o'clock. And at 6 o'clock, I said, they must all be fed before they leave. We set off along the road to Cairo.
This is 6 o'clock in the morning?
No. We drove all night. I wanted to drive by dark to get through Cairo in the dark so as to be able to pass through the city with the least possible notice. This I achieved and bivouacked the other side of Mina, where we collected paws for breakfast and rest, and collected the hundreds of stragglers who were rejoining the regiment.
Now, they'd been training on the lake. I think that was the reason most of them were away. They're training for the same roads operation. They'd been caught on the hop. Now, Seeley had gone up. Colonel Seeley was your colonel. You were at this time a major. You may have been a courtesy colonel, but you were a major at the time. And Seeley was now. What were your first impressions of the unit on taking over?
I thought that the regimental sergeant major was an excellent disciplinarian. I thought that he arranged the departure of the regiment in an incredibly short time, and he understood perfectly his orders and did them to the best of his ability. But for the next for several months, I was second in command of this regiment, and I found that, and I realized that the NCOs, warrant officers, and men were of a very high standard. That discipline was excellent. They themselves were strong and intelligent, and took advantage of every order or instruction that was given them.
Now, what about the officers? What was you in your letter?
Three officers that I liked. I liked the colonel, the adjutant, and the padre. Now, the padre was an exceptional man.
That's Padre Parry.
Parry. He had played rugger for Wales. He was no more, he was no less frightened of shells and dive bombers than any other man. But he did not allow his fear ever to interfere in anything that he wished to do. And invariably, during the siege of Tobruk, we were dive bombed twice a day.
I'll come back to that to keep it in order. Yeah. What about, so, Seely, what about your two battery commanders? 425 battery was Peter Birkin, and 426 battery was William, Major William Barber. What were your first impressions of that pair? Or do you remember them as individuals still?
Yes, I remember them well. I liked Major Barber the best. I thought he was always intelligent, and he understood his orders, and he did them. Major Birkin, I found was not very helpful, and preferred to do anything that he was asked to do. In his own time and his own way. Now, they did not, as a whole, the officers, like me as a second in command.
What?
I was a regular officer. I had been brought up in a hospitality regiment, and I was accustomed to carry out anything that I was told to do immediately and to the best of my ability. I did not find that the majority of these officers copied me in any way whatsoever, nor did they like me.
How did they show that? Did they show? Was it an immediate thing, that, or did it develop over the year?
Need we go into this at all?
It's just we know some of the personalities concerned. I mean, if you can leave out names, but did you get on with them at first and then it goes sour, or?
No. I never, I thought that they found difficulty in obeying orders and in carrying out any operation that they themselves did not care for.
Right, well,
I can't say less than that.